Hi, this is Anthea Williams. Welcome to the Sideshow Podcast, a show by and for artists with disability. Our first season was made under the title Activated Arts. We've uploaded every episode of the first season, and you can listen to them here at your leisure. Hi, this is Anthea Williams. Welcome to the Sideshow Podcast, a show by and for artists with disability. Our first season was made under the title Activated Arts. We've uploaded every episode of the first season, and you can listen to them here at your leisure. Hi, this is Anthea Williams with Activated Arts for 2RPH. Thanks so much for joining us. Today we are going to talk about one of my favourite programs, and it's one of my favourite programs because I took part in it last year. Screenability is supported by Film New South Wales, and the films that are made through Screenability are part of the Sydney Film Festival. Today I'm joined by Emily Jash and Sean Spinner, both of whom have made Screenability films in the past. Emily Jash is an actor, a writer, a speaker, and a disability advocate. And she has an emphasis on social inclusion and expanding perceptions of disability in her work. She's a founding member of the theatre company Midnight Feast. Sean Spinner is a writer and actor, and he's one of the lead writers on the website La Rosas. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
So Emily, you made your film last year, in 2020, Groundhog Night. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about it and how you came up with the idea?
So Groundhog Night is a family comedy drama around living with a disability and the family dynamics that are around that. And how I came up with it is that it is very much based on my own experiences, but still fictionalized. So what I like to say is it's not a true story, but it's a very real story in that a lot of the things that happen in the film, including the ending, are things that people have done or said to me, so that's interesting. But I hasten to add that my grandparents are actually very nice people. Yes, so that's all fictional.
That is
something that has been said to me all this.
I'm really pleased to hear that your grandparents are lovely people. Look, in the film, the grandparents are so well-meaning, but yeah, they make some terrible calls. It is such a great film. And look, one thing that's great about all of these films is they're available on ABC iView. So if you are listening in Australia, you're able to go and listen to any of them for free, watch any of them for free, I should say. And I will absolutely put links to all of them in the show notes. Sean, can you tell us a little bit about your fabulous film, Prone to the Drone?
Yeah, sure. So Prone to the Drone is about a young man that lives by himself and just kind of isolates himself from the world. And it's not until one day a drone lands in his backyard that he's kind of like forced to like confront like, you know, his feelings, his emotions and that, and like, you know, just get out there and that. And I came up with that idea from like basing off like feelings and emotions that I had like a couple of years ago when I fell into like a depressed state, and I kind of wanted to like get out of that, and I was like wanted to bring out like the good and the funny in like the bad situations.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful film. Your character in it has such a beautiful interaction with the boys in his neighbourhood, and I really appreciated that. Both of you wrote your films and acted in them. How was that? That's a lot to take on.
It is a lot to take on. And I people always ask me which I like better, writing or acting things. And the answer is that both of them bring you different things and you learn different skills and you can bring different parts of yourself to them. So while it's a lot to take on, I really enjoyed every single aspect of it. And it was important for me to be at the center of that story because it's so well informed by my own experiences and my family's experiences.
That's really interesting. You're giving a lot of yourself. The film that I made, I didn't write. I directed it and I wasn't in it. And I still felt like I gave a lot of myself in that process. We worked with a young actor who had cerebral palsy. I grew up with rheumatoid arthritis. So much as the disability isn't the same, they're both physical disabilities that lead to some of this, some kind of similar outcomes. And there's a moment in the piece where the young boy jumps on a bed. And that is exactly what I remember doing in a hospital when I was a little bit younger than my character, but I certainly felt like I gave a lot of myself in terms of bringing the film to light. Do you feel the same, Sean? Do you feel like it was an opportunity to tell a really personal story?
Yeah, definitely. Like, because I've always been a part of like other people's stories and like helping them tell their like stories and their experiences and that. And, like, for me to like come out and just like, you know, be able to tell my story and like get the support and the help from people that I've like contributed and been a part of like the past couple of years. It was a beautiful comeback kind of experience where it's like we've known each other for like years and you know, now I finally want to like come up and tell something and everybody just jumped on and it was like a really beautiful experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know you worked with Curious Works and they're a remarkable company, so it's nice to acknowledge that their involvement in it as well. Had either of you applied for funding to make yourselves films before?
Yes, I had, including that I was going to apply for Grand Old Night funding the previous year, but we couldn't get the script together in time. But yes, for other projects, I've also applied for funding.
And how had that gone? Had you had a lot of support from the industry previously?
No, I haven't had a lot of support. I don't know about any of you, but I've always found it really difficult to get funding. I think that's par for the course, though, because we live in a very competitive industry.
Yeah, that's true. It certainly was a process that opened up a lot of doors for me. And I think Sophia Gollan, who does a lot of the running of this program through Screen New South Wales, has been fantastic because I certainly know when I was looking at places to apply for funding, it was going to be really difficult, even though I had a lot of experience in a kind of sister industry, to get funding for a short film. And having made the short film has opened up a lot of doors for me. Have you found that as well, Emily? I know that you should tell us a little bit about where Groundhog Night is going now.
Yeah, look, I can't even begin to tell you how many doors making this film has opened up for me and getting this funding from Screen New South Wales. Not only did the film kind of raise my profile and get into lots of international and national festivals and have lots of great success, but it's also been a stepping stone towards some of my next projects. Basically, one of the things that I want to do that's taking up a lot of my focus at the moment is I want to develop the characters from Groundhog Night into a TV series because we really enjoyed the character dynamics and think that they have a lot more stories to tell. So, yeah, it really has opened up a whole lot of doors.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I've had a similar experience. And I know, Sean, when I was looking at Prone to the Drone, there is a lot of laurels on that poster. I know that short film has been to a lot of places. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, after the Sydney Film Festival, it went through to the travelling film festival. It was a great and interesting experience to like just see that travel and like, you know, go through there. It got nominated for a Canadian award at a film festival in Canada. An interesting experience to like just have people like hear and talk about me, and like, you know, it's like people come up to me and like they kind of know me, and that is like it's a opening experience in that now. It's like, you know, before I was like kind of a nobody, and now I'm like, you know, somebody that's somewhat recognized in the industry.
Something that's been really interesting for me is that while I couldn't go anywhere and do things because COVID was on, my film was going everywhere. So things like the Travelling Film Festival, Cinefest Oz, St Kilda Film Festival, Cleveland International, it went all these places that we couldn't go. But still the film was being seen by so many people and hopefully changing hearts and minds all over the world while I was stuck here. So that's good.
I had that experience as well. And it's kind of like delightfully frustrating, isn't it? Like on one hand, you're so thrilled. And on the other hand, you're just like, what the hell? My film's in America and I'm not? This is so unfair.
Yes, absolutely. I know that when we went to St. Kilda Film Festival and saw it with in-person audience for the first time, it was a really amazing experience.
Yeah, I had that experience at the New Zealand Film Festival, and I think I had that experience probably the earliest of all of the filmmakers from our cohort, because New Zealand was able to open up really early. So before my writer or my producer or anyone else I made it with was able to see it, I saw it at the New Zealand Film Festival with about 600 people, and that was remarkable. And that was the first time I heard my film with surround sound, because I'd rushed back to New Zealand so I could help my parents through lockdown. And I'd actually done the sound edit of my film on my laptop. So I'd never heard it with surround sound. Yeah, it was amazing to have that experience. So I think it'd be interesting for the three of us to chat, because we all identify as living with disability.
Yes.
How do we feel that the film and screen industry treats people with disability?
I mean, it's very slowly changing, but we are still the most underrepresented group on screen, so that's something. And there's obviously so many attitudinal and other types of barriers as well in terms of training and employment and things like this. So we've still got a long way to go, but, you know, we'll get there.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. What are your thoughts, Sean?
I think Emily pretty much said the key point of it is that, yeah, it is slowly starting to change, but, like, I think there needs to be a bigger change to, like, you know, push forward and, like, put more artists with disabilities into, like, a situation where we're giving more opportunities, more recognition, and, like, just recognised in such a better light than just a person with a disability. Like, you know, we're all human beings, you know?
Yeah. What do you think most needs to change in the industry?
I think representation. I think it really starts with representation. So when you're making a project about a community, make sure that you're, like, authentically connecting with that community and not just one person.
Yeah.
So if you want to make a story about disability, you don't just go have a coffee with Emily Dash and say, oh, I've consulted with a disability. Like, no. You have to find ways of connecting with the community, whether it's yours or someone else's, and find ways of meaningfully engaging, whether that's a co-writing role or, you know, roles in front of and behind the camera are really important as well.
Roles both behind and in front of the camera. I think that's really true. I was amazed when I was making Safety Net. I certainly had... Sophia was wonderful, and I had so much support from Create New South Wales to do what I needed to do. But I did have a few people who were wondering why I was working with an actor who hadn't done a film before. And, you know, they seemed to think I could get a kid to pretend this. And, you know, my lead actor was 12 years old. Of course, I was possibly going to cast someone who hadn't done a film before. And I was so clear that there was no way I was making this film without casting a child who had disability. I think it's amazing that those thoughts are still around, that can happen. Yeah. Have you come across those kind of thoughts in your work, Sean or Emily, people making those kind of comments?
I have. Certainly something even just recently crossed my desk that was completely not open to authentic casting at all. it's moments like that where you think, what are we doing this for? But if there's at least one more authentically cast, authentically represented story, then we're doing our job and it's making a difference.
Yeah, so. I think so. I've also had the experience recently of going back to revisit films that I didn't judge at all harshly when I was younger, because I was just so used to seeing a really limited vision of people with disability. And even though I lived with disability, I didn't question it. And now realizing that I would view those films in a completely different way, which is a great realization.
It's really interesting because I get asked, like when I'm doing talks on representation and things, I get asked whether the inauthentic casting takes away absolutely from a great performance, say in like My Left Foot or something like that. And what I say is you have to be aware that, and this goes across the board for everything, you have to be aware that something is a product of its time.
Yeah.
So for that time, those things are great. For this time, if we were to make that film now, it would not be great.
That's a really good point, Emily. I like that a lot. Do you agree with that, Sean?
Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah, yeah. I just hit it right on the ball there. Like, yeah, that's exactly what I was saying. Because I was like, yeah, we have so much easier access to, like, communicating with people. There's no way, you know, you can't find people that you want for, like, a specific film. It should be a lot easier to find that representation to uphold in those films now than what, you know, there would have been, like, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right as well, Emily. That thing you said about having a conversation with Emily Dash over coffee is not consultation. I love that.
It's only because it happens so much.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We did a piece on consultation last time we did the show, and I spoke to a brilliant theatre maker, Tom Middleditch, who said every consultation needs to be done with the person who is highest up on the creative chain. So you need to be having a consultation with the writer or the director, because if you're any lower than that, you actually can't implement what needs to be implemented. And I think that's really important as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, active engagement, active involvement, that's so important.
Were your films screened online when they like came out, or was it in person?
No, we couldn't have an in-person screening because of COVID. Mm. So our premiere for Sydney Film Festival was online. I only had in-person film festival about a month ago.
That's what I was kind of thinking for, like, 2019. I wish they would have, like, a thing where after they screen it, for the duration of that festival, they could have it online. You could pay for a slightly smaller fee rather than, like, having to go on the train and go out to a place that's, like, probably, like, 2 hours away, 3-4 hours away. You could either watch in person or online for, you know, a duration.
Certainly, right. COVID has taught us so much about access. So often we think about access, we think about ramps and seating, and that is really, really important. But there are so many other forms of access that we need to make available to people as well, including geographic access and economic access.
Exactly.
And it was wonderful that the festival was so available to people. It was tricky for us filmmakers in some ways, because we were part of the Sydney Film Festival, we couldn't apply for the Melbourne Film Festival. And there are some great programs that are a part of both festivals, which would have been wonderful to be able to access. And certainly it created some issues. But it was wonderful that I could invite friends all over to Australia to see my work. So what I would love to hear now is what you're up to at the moment. Emily, you've told us a little bit about Groundhog Night and moving it into a series. What are the other projects that you're working on?
Well, the other projects I'm working on, I'm currently working on a web series called Freewheelers. I've just written a film called Valiant, which is another film with Bus Stop Films. I work in my kind of day job as a writer and producer at a small production company called My Treehouse. So that keeps me busy. Yeah, I have a play called Freefall that I'm looking at adapting into either a film or a miniseries. So yeah, I'm doing a lot at the moment.
Yeah, so you're super busy.
Yeah.
What about you, Sean? What are you up to?
I'm doing a collaborative artwork with Curious Works, title pending, but it's called T-Way Stories. So basically we wanted to make like a collaborative art installation about something that represents Western Sydney and something that represents everybody like from our group. And it's just like a bunch of tales and like things that revolve around like bus stops and that. That's one project. I'll just show you something here. So on my wall over here, I got like sticky notes for a short feature that I want to make. It's about understanding the emotion of like love and like what does it mean to like love and like, you know, have that feeling, do self-care and that. Other than that, I've kind of started on a path to like exploring how to use live streaming as like a more film theatrical kind of element.
Awesome. So for our listeners who don't have the benefit of what I just got to see on Zoom, Sean just spun his computer around and showed me this beautiful dark green wall he has that is completely covered in post-it notes. Post-it notes, the writer's best friend. I know that I have used them a great many times as well. It's lovely to hear that you're so busy writing and creating as well. Hey, it's been so wonderful chatting to you both. I'd just like to remind listeners that the Sydney Film Festival is coming up in a few months in Sydney and they're doing screenability again. I've spoken to some of the screenability creators from this year coming up and I've already got to see one of the films. It's a great lineup, so I really suggest people go when it's part of the Sydney Film Festival. Hey, Emily and Sean, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. It was a great pleasure. Yeah.
Make sure that you get onto iView and watch both of their films, Groundhog Night and Prone to the Drone. And, of course, watch my film as well, Safety Net. Welcome to Activated Arts on 2RPH. Hannah, brilliant Hannah, what have you been seeing and not seeing this month? What have you got to recommend for us?
Well, this first one turns the tables a bit because it's something I got to experience, but now the festival has finished, so others won't get to. Although maybe we'll be lucky and this artwork will pop up again somewhere else in the future. Take Me Somewhere, Glasgow's Festival of Contemporary International Performance, went online this year, and I swung by the digital festival to catch Sarah Hopfinger's Pain and I, an intimate audio experience exploring the complexities of chronic pain. This is a primarily text-based audio work, and there's also a PDF transcript available. And this work actually originally existed as a live choreographic performance. So this new audio experience is a transposition of that work into a different form. We're seeing a lot of exciting experiments in this sphere over the last year. It reminds me somewhat of the transpositions of audio to dance to audio in the chain collaboration of Andy Slater, Fayenda Evie, Anna Seymour, Pippa Samaya, and Hilary Guadel, or the intimate and embodied listening experiences created by the iconic Letai Tamoapo. And as a bedridden audience member, it's a very satisfying way to experience an artwork. Now, I wasn't sure how I would react to a piece about pain. I live with chronic pain, and sometimes I find artwork that reflects that experience back to me soothing. And sometimes I'll read Anne Boyer's The Undying during a flare. But sometimes I find it makes it harder to endure. So I went into this audio work with a little trepidation, but I actually found it to be a really beautiful experience that made me consider my pain and my relationship to it in a totally different way.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I'm really intrigued about seeing it now. I actually have exactly the same thing. I was really worried about reading a couple of books that we talked about on the podcast a couple of months ago, Unseen and Tell Me Where It Hurts, Jacinta Parsons and Kylie Maslin's books. And I was so pleased I read them, but I was really concerned about reading something about chronic pain when it's something I experience, because so often I use distraction techniques to get me through. yet those books helped me learn so much about my own experiences and how my experiences are related to other people's with disabilities. So I'm really pleased that I had read them. So yeah, okay, I'll get involved. And what's your other thing, Hannah?
The AHA Ensemble are currently artists in residence at Le Bois Theatre in Brisbane, and they'll be giving a showing of their new physical creation, Yoke, at the Roundhouse on June 25 and 26. Yoke explores interpersonal relationships and how lived experiences of both visible and invisible disability shape the parameters of connection. Access-wise, this work is primarily a visually based work with some spoken dialogue and auditory elements. And no strobe effects will be used. Thank you. June 25th performance will be an Auslan interpreted performance, and June 26th will be a relaxed performance. And tickets are at leboite.com.au.
Awesome. They both sound like really amazing events. That's cool. Hey, I've got something to recommend as well. Coming up on August the 22nd, Into the Space Between the Notes is going to be on as part of the Vivid Festival at the Sydney Opera House. Liz Martin, supported by Eliza Hull and full band, it is going to be a fantastic event and I'm absolutely going. It's going to be wheelchair accessible. Unfortunately, it doesn't have an online component, which is a real shame. But both of these women live with disability. I think it's going to be remarkable to see them perform together. A lot of people will know Liz Martin from this podcast because Liz used to do the What's On With Us. And also a lot of people would have tried to see her at the Sydney Festival earlier in the year. And unfortunately, that didn't go ahead because of COVID and people not being able to arrive from Melbourne. So it's going to be an excellent chance to see her live, hear her fantastic music, and see her perform with Eliza Hull.
Oh, I'm disappointed I don't get to see that one, that there's no online component, because Liz's music is amazing. But I hope that everyone else gets the chance to go in and experience it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Hey, as always, it's been brilliant chatting to you, Hannah. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So to take us out today, we're going to listen to Nighttime by Liz Martin. I hope you can get along to the Opera House and see her.
If we could be once more, the love.